The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Monday edition of a numbers game here on VSiN. Is Matt Brown in for Gil Alexander? Kelly Bidlin behind the glass. Kevin back there on the ones and twos. Got a lot to talk about here. We had a very, very interesting tennis match we will get to. And listen, I know it's not really tennis season right now. Probably weren't paying a ton of attention to it. Hopefully you were on the Twitter machine and found your way over to that. We have some clarity over in the golf world as well. Are we figuring things out in the NFL? Who's the starter? Who's not? Who's going to get in those ones reps? Things that we are looking at. Paul Spohr is going to join us. We're going to talk some baseball a little bit later with him. Ben Brown, all things football from over at Pro Football Focus. And then Thor Nystrom. Talk some college football as well, because this is our final weekend. We just passed it, in which we don't have real football. We will have week zero games next week over in college football. But kicking things off in the golf world, we do have Victor Hovland, who goes and shoots a course record. Poor guys. We go out there, we get guys with course records. They're going to take a picture together. They're going to stand there. Everything's going great. And instead, Victor Hovland goes out there on Sunday. He gets the course record, shoots 61, just a casual 28 on the back. If you were wondering, you probably can't do that on a putt-putt course over nine holes. But yes, he goes in on a real course and shoots 28 on the back nine. It was like he was playing Tiger Woods on easy mode. It was absolutely ridiculous. Everything was dialed in. The putter was dialed in. The irons were right there. Kelly, I'm sitting there watching what's going on with Victor Hovland. And this is a guy that, if you listen to Long Shots, by the way, cheap plug right there for any time that you want to get free information on who we are betting each and every week, you can go to your favorite podcast host, and we are in there.
Winner for Wes Reynolds this week.
Yeah, we was going to say, we've bet Vic a decent amount, right? And he's a guy in which we always question at the end of the tournament, what are we doing here? Should we just bet him top 10? Should we just bet him top 5? Because it seems like he always has that kind of one or two blow-up hole stretch, which ends up not getting him the title. And instead, in this one, not only did he not have that blow-up hole, he actually went out and he went and took this tournament. Because if you look, Rory was 4-under. Scotty was 4-under. Fitzpatrick was 4-under. They shot 4-under on a Sunday and still lose this thing by two strokes because Victor Hovland went out and took this tournament. It was not handed to him. It was not given to him. He had to come from way back. He had to have a historic round, and he did just that to win this tournament.
Yeah, shout out to Jesse Welch, who often tweets into us, but he mentioned, you know, right as he was making the turn, basically, that, hey, he's either going to blow up here or go out and win the whole thing. That's sure what he did. I mean, look, he's a great player. You and I, like you said, have bet on him a fair amount in the past couple years. We've just kind of been waiting for the short game development to come along and catch up to where he is off the tee and on approach, where he's one of the best ball strikers on tour. And, I think you've seen a good example of it the past few weeks between guys like him and guys like Lucas Glover, right? When these guys who are great tee to green can get hot with the putter, and, you know, sometimes with Victor Hovland, you know, a guy with Victor Hovland's caliber, you're keeping yourself in the tournament so, you know, as long as you need to until that putter gets hot, lightning hot on that back nine of the final round, and boom, you can go on and win a tournament like that. So potential's always been there with Vic. It was awesome to see yesterday. I do think it's a different perspective when you're chasing down Scottie Scheffler too, right? Like that is, all we've talked about is the masterful performances that Scottie Scheffler has put on this year. And to go, when he had that lead yesterday, Matt, like I thought that thing was over. When he took a two-shot lead, I thought Scottie Scheffler was running away with that thing. No way was anybody catching him. And Vic ran him down. He ran him down. It was amazing.
He did. And Scottie shoots 4-under. Putter failed him there. Listen, putter was pretty good for him all week long, and that's why I thought he might run away with the tournament. Putter failed him. He loses 1.44 strokes in round four with the putter, and again, that's enough to get it done whenever Victor Hovland gains as much as he does with basically every single aspect of the game with all of that. Victor Hovland, $3.6 million. Scottie Scheffler, Matt Fitzpatrick, $1.76 million each. There was the outright four for Rory McIlroy, who puts on just yet another top five performance, $990,000 for him. Brian Harman, $790,000, as is Max Homa, $790,000. They are T5. I bring that up because, Kelly, you and I had an interesting discussion back and forth on Friday, and I was trying to debate what I was going to do. I had a Max Homa ticket at 30-1. Max Homa had a two-stroke lead heading into Saturday. We often talk about the deficiencies we have in the betting market here living in Nevada. And one of the very few things where we do have an advantage is our friends over at Circa Sports do post yes, no markets. And I know you've utilized this when you've had guys going into a Sunday. I very rarely utilized it with guys going into a Saturday. I will fully admit that.
I have once or twice.
Yeah. But it was a two-stroke lead. It was a pretty modest minus 220 on the no for Max Homa. And I start talking to you. I talk to a couple of other smart guys. And I'm like, listen, I could lock in, you know, a steak dinner here, cover all my expenses for the, you know, everything that I invested in this tournament and basically have a free roll on Max Homa at that point. Right. And it's all upside for any of the other stuff that I had. I only had three outright tickets. I only had a handful of placement market stuff. So there was still some upside left on some meat on the bone there on the Max ticket. And of course, some of the placement market stuff too. You were like, you know, it's pretty tempting, specifically given how things were going out there. I talked to a couple other guys who were telling me, look, it does not look like this course is going to firm up. It looks like it's going to be gettable. And if it's gettable, any of these guys can go out and go super, super low. So I did end up taking advantage of that no market there on Max Homa. And thank goodness that I did, because Max Homa goes out and finds a triple bogey there on Saturday. Yep. And was never the same after that. You know, I get some questions about like, oh, should I hedge this? Should I hedge that? The question, Kelly, you know, there's always these guys that are team no hedge. I'm not necessarily of that mindset, specifically in these kind of one-on-one type sport, you know, individual sports, golf, tennis, UFC. If you've got a big thing rolling into a UFC deal, like I'm never really team no hedge because weird things can and do happen. Again, Max Homa was striping the ball, absolutely striping the ball, and then triple bogey out of nowhere, right? You see in the UFC, guys going along, next thing you know, whatever, knee injury, breaks his hand, orbital something, whatever it might be, ends up losing the fight. That can happen in tennis as well, right? I mean, we see, and we'll talk about that in just a second, right? Alcaraz gets frustrated and punches a water cooler and almost has to, you know, almost has to pull out that match. So for me, I think in the individual sports, if you're trying to make money in this, again, if you just want the big sweat, I get it. But I mean, if you're really trying to kind of make some money in this stuff, I'm not against making sure that you lock in some money and go ahead with that.
Yeah, me either. I think that's I think it's pretty important in golf, actually, and I think we get a ton of questions about it. I think the biggest thing I would say is you got to have a plan. It's one of those you got to be doing it intelligently if you're going to hedge off and you know, not only short term, but how are you attacking that throughout the entirety of a season?
And the ticket you're holding, right? So I had a John Rahm ticket. Rahm was only 10-1. I'm not betting.
Yeah, you're not doing it.
At that point, I'm not doing it. There's no meat left on the bone afterwards, right? But at least with Homa at the 30-1. I was able to cover everything I put in and still have upside, right?
Yeah.
There was still upside for him if he were to win. So the answer is always, and I know this is like a horrible thing when people ask these questions, it depends.
It depends. Yeah.
It depends on every situation is unique. Every bankroll is unique. Every strategy of betting is unique. There are some guys who are like, I will never hedge. I do not care. And if that's your strategy and that has worked out and paid off for you, perfectly fine. Only one guy wins a golf tournament. And so for me, I tend to lock in some profit, and then, you know, if there's upside left on that, then that's the way I kind of go about it. Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz. If you didn't catch this yesterday, we plugged it a little bit on the network before it got going. 4:30 Eastern yesterday. It was the finals over in Cincinnati. 3 hours and 49 minutes later. And by the way, this was just a three-set match. That was actually the longest best of three final in ATP history that went on yesterday. Novak Djokovic ends up getting the win in this one. They have faced each other four times. They're 2-2 now in finals. They both save match points in this thing. Djokovic's 95th career title, his 39th Masters 1000 title. And now we are heading over to New York, where it looks like this is just going to be a collision course with these guys yet again. Novak, of course, towards the end of his career, the oldest guy to ever win this tournament now at 36 years old, 20-year-old. Is Alcaraz the future of tennis for sure? You had nothing but praise said on both sides of this thing after this was over with. You had Djokovic honestly going off about how this guy at 20 years old couldn't believe the resiliency, couldn't believe how he was so mentally tough throughout the course of that. Then you have Djokovic doing what Djokovic does. Looks like he's down and out in this thing. Looks like the body was failing him, and instead he just finds whatever he finds and continues to find, which makes him, again, in my opinion, the GOAT. I know there's a lot of arguments against that. And listen, that's everyone's personal opinion again on that one as well. But Djokovic comes back yet again and wins this thing 95 career titles, and 39 of those are Masters 1000. Kelly, it's just, you look at this guy, he's just a different breed of athlete. You see him dig, his body, again, his body was failing him. He just did not let that, he just didn't let it win. And he came back and beat it, the 20-year-old that, again, is poised for just greatness in the sport.
Yeah, I watched the first set of that. And so I was a little surprised to see that Novak won, obviously, after that. Yeah. But, incredible performance. That we've got, spin it forward, U.S. Open odds, plus 130 for Novak. He's the short shot right now over at DraftKings. Carlos Alcaraz plus 150, then a drop down to 7-1 with Daniil Medvedev. Anything that you're looking at leaning towards early for the U.S. Open?
Man, at this point, I think it's a collision course for those two guys. I mean, of course, we'll see the draw and see how everything plays out, but I'll probably just wait and bet the match when it gets there. You know, because I mean, like the odds at that point are, it's, you know.
Yeah, you're not getting much bang for your buck in plus 150 if those two meet in the finals.
Exactly, right. And so I'll probably just bet the match when it all comes down to it. Our final little bit here, circling back to the golf world, Kelly, I mean, the big news, of course, going on out there is what's going to happen with the Ryder Cup. We know the 6 automatic qualifiers, so we do have that in place here. But everyone in the hot debate is going to be, as we move forward, who's going to be those captain's picks. And their odds are out on this, actually. You can take a look. Colin Morikawa seems to be a lock, according to the bookmakers. Ricky Fowler seems to be a lock. The interesting one to me here is the Brooks Koepka at minus 700 to make the Ryder Cup team, because he fell out of the automatic qualifier spot.
Yep.
And Kelly, listen, Zach Johnson has not shied away from letting everybody know that he hadn't really talked to those LIV guys, doesn't think too highly of LIV in general. Minus 700 might be a little too much on Brooks Koepka, even though I think he probably should end up making it. Let's talk some NFL preseason, see if there's any takeaways. What did we learn over the last week? It's a numbers game here on VSiN.
The Sports Betting Network.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. You do have to be 21 or older and physically located in the great state of Nevada. Please gamble responsibly, and if you do have a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. NFL preseason, not really my cup of tea from a betting standpoint. I have never really had a ton of success doing it, but I have had some success trying to really analyze what these teams are doing and what these depth charts are starting to look like. And more than anything, the depth in general of these teams. If people ask me, hey, man, what are you looking for in the preseason? I know there's some guys that are great preseason bettors out there. More power to you. I don't want to guess how many snaps guys are playing in series and things and stuff like that. I do want to know, what does the, let's say if this left tackle gets hurt for this team, what does the backup quarterback situation look like? What does this defensive line look like if they need to be rotating guys in and out? It's little things like that that I try to pick up on somewhere along the way. I mean, some of the stuff that we were able to pick up on, Kelly, at least early on here in this, is like, look, the Raiders went out, they diced up the Rams, and I think that's less about the Raiders than it is about the Rams. Now, listen, Aaron Donald was not out there, so I won't, certainly the best defensive player we've seen in our, you know, in our short time in the last, you know, decade or so, it wasn't out there. That being said, it does look like this Rams team's floor might be even lower than I thought. Now, I already thought this team was going to be pretty bad, but it does seem like this floor could be even lower than we thought, because if they can't play defense to go along with what seems to be kind of Cooper Kupp and everybody else on the offensive side of the ball, it could be pretty bad. Now, I don't think Cardinals bad. I think the Cardinals still are pretty much going to be the worst team in the NFL. But, man, if this Rams defense is as bad as they've shown in the first couple of preseason games here, I get it. Aaron Donald will be back out there. He still has to have someone around him to help him out. He just get triple teamed every single time and then take him out of the game. I think the Rams floor might even be lower than I thought it could be.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and one I've kind of had my eye on, because they're a team that I haven't really known what to do with this offseason. They are a team that I really didn't know if they were going to, you know, maybe be a little bit better than a lot of people expected. I did think there was that potential for this team, and it maybe still is. I mean, we're talking preseason football, obviously. But, you know, I think there's definitely that potential, yeah, that they could be pretty bad this year too. And, yeah, you haven't seen a whole lot you like. I think it's an interesting – I think it's an interesting case study just for going forward with some of these teams of, okay, what happens – if you sell out to win a Super Bowl, right? What does that look like a couple years later? Well, you could have some guys on some massive contracts that maybe even still have some, you know, a good amount of talent left in them, but you just have nothing else around the team that you can't do any, you can't go anywhere.
And listen, it's why it's hard for me to buy in on the Rams and why I think that the Rams are one of those teams that we might be looking at come trade deadline, and this team could look different. I mean, if you're the Rams and you are rebuilding as much as they are, it would be in your best interest if you are having an absolutely abysmal season to kind of sell off some of these guys. And that actually includes Aaron Donald, right? I mean, I think Aaron Donald has enough respect within that organization to go to them and say, hey, guys, I would rather finish out my career here on somebody that's a contender. And there would be a lot of people who would love to have Aaron Donald on that team for sure. I don't know if they could get rid of Cooper Kupp. He's still kind of young and on the upswing of his career. What I will say about how bad this defense could be actually is on the flip side, probably pretty good for a guy like Cooper Kupp, because as we know, if you are sitting there from a prop standpoint, right? If you are trailing in games, you're not running the ball. You're throwing the ball. You're having to play catch up. You are eliminating what would normally be run plays out of the offense because you can't run the ball anymore and you're just having to throw a ton more. So a guy that's already projected to get a ton of catches and a ton of yardage, I think you look at a guy like Cooper Kupp, and if this defense is as poor as it's shown so far, you might be a little bit more bullish on Cooper Kupp and what he brings to the table and a little bit more bearish on the running back situation just there in the Rams in general. I don't know if you were really loving it anyway. I mean, we know Cam Akers was disgruntled and was trying to get out of there, and now he's the starter, and, like, you know, you can try to figure all that out. But I don't know if I'm really jumping in on Cam Akers with stuff like that either, Kelly, because, you know, we might be looking at a team come week eight that is basically just having to almost go to a run and gun type deal, because there's just no way in the world for them to be able to run the ball effectively. And they're playing, you know, they're always looking up a double digit deficit.
Yeah. And I think if you, it wasn't all that long ago that you can remember what Matthew Stafford was in Detroit.
Right.
There was a whole lot of that. Right. So I think it's a great point by you. I think Cooper Kupp, I think you could even look elsewhere of overs on some receivers on this team.
Van Jefferson.
Exactly. So, just from simply what you're talking about, if this is, you're trying to play catch up in a lot of games in the back half of the season, it's going to be Stafford throwing the ball all over the place.
I still have questions about the Chiefs receiving core, but there is at least something to feel pretty good about. If you look this past week, rookie Rashee Rice, 8 catches, 96 yards. Now, albeit that was against the Cardinals, who I just said I believe is going to be the worst team in the NFL. That being said, you look what he brings to the table, and this was kind of what I was wondering about the Chiefs team in general. Who is going to be the guy that is the big play guy here for this team? Now, could that be MVS? Was maybe the reason he never was successful in Green Bay was because you heard the stuff that Aaron Rodgers didn't trust him. You heard Aaron Rodgers didn't like him all that much. And with that, he got very few targets in that offense and never really was able to flourish. So maybe that changes with a Patrick Mahomes. Kadarius Toney already dealing with an injury. His problem not necessarily is his talent, but what does he actually bring to the table from a how many games are you playing standpoint out there? And so you see a guy like Rice go out and, again, against the Cardinals, it is preseason, all of these things, but still, for a rookie, 8 catches, 96 yards, could he be that guy that Patrick Mahomes kind of looks to for some of the big plays, for some of the splash plays? He looked great after the catch. He was really, really good once he got the ball in his hands. And so still do have some questions just over the long term for this Chiefs team, but maybe Rashee Rice is going to actually step up and be one of those guys that can be a playmaker for them.
Yeah, we'll have to see. I'm not really worried about the Chiefs. After what we saw them do last year, right, I'm not really worried what this receiving corps is going to look like. I think Sky Moore is probably going to take a big step forward here this year. So I think they're going to be just fine.
-165 for them to win the AFC West. Chargers +340. Broncos 5.5-1. And then down at the bottom are the Raiders at 12-1. Question coming out of Tampa Bay: did the Bucs decide that it's going to be Baker Mayfield as quarterback? They curiously decided to sit Baker Mayfield this past week. And so is that a tell that he has won the quarterback battle against Kyle Trask? Well, if you ask Todd Bowles, he says no. He said it just kind of worked out that way. I don't buy it, Kelly. I'm sorry. I don't buy it, right? I don't buy it. I think this kind of is them tipping their hand a little bit that it's going to be Baker Mayfield, at least to start the season, right? I mean, he's not their long-term solution. There's no upside with Baker Mayfield. You kind of know what you're getting. He is what he is. Maybe there's some upside with Trask. We don't really, really know. But I think if you're Todd Bowles, you're going with the guy that's got the experience. You're going with the guy that's been out there. And it's very much – it's very easy for Baker Mayfield to start four games, and then you pull him and you say, okay, now we're going to the upside guy, than it is the reverse situation where it's like, oh, Baker Mayfield, you know, veteran of the league, you lost the job to this guy who doesn't have any experience, and oh, no, no, come in the middle of the season and take over. So I think it was kind of a logical step and something that we pretty much assumed anyway, but I'm not buying him that this wasn't a tell. I think this means that Baker's their quarterback.
Yeah, I don't really know why. There's situations like this where it's, why do you need to lie about that?
Yeah.
Like, it's so obvious. Come on, man.
Right.
The Bucs finish last in the NFC South? Yay or nay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is another team that I think, kind of like the Rams, could be sold off for parts, right? Yep. Because they did the same thing, pretty much kind of sold out for a Super Bowl. You got it. You can't, I mean, listen, you cannot argue with this, right? I mean, you got what you went out and tried to do, but you still have Mike Evans that has some value in the trade market. You still have some of these guys that you can still get a little bit for. The defensive side of the ball has some playmakers, which I actually think is going to be interesting from a Bucs standpoint, just betting them on the spread week to week, because I don't know if they're going to be getting blown out in games, because they do have talent on the defensive side of the ball. It's just, I just don't know how many points they're going to be able to score. I think the games might be a little bit closer than maybe sometimes we expect, just because the defense is actually still talented. But I do wonder, again, same thing with the Rams. Do we get to a point where they look, they say, hey, this is pretty bleak around here. We need to get what we can get back from a draft capital standpoint and try to rebuild this deal. So I do wonder if some of those guys are kind of getting shipped off. We heard, and I think, Kelly, last time I was in here, you and I even talked about that, you know, Adam Thielen had become a very popular target for Bryce Young and that they had some sort of rapport. Bryce Young's played 32 snaps this preseason. Now, this is courtesy of our good friend Adam Levitan over at Establish the Run. Adam Thielen has been out there for 29 of those 32 snaps, and so it seems like he's a guy that – again, I don't know if you want to be looking. I mean, his yardage is only 550 and a half, right, on the season. Yeah. Maybe it's a receptions deal if you don't believe. If you just think he's going to run little four-yard curls and stuff and all that, maybe the yardage isn't the way to go. Maybe it's just receptions. But, again, Thielen's out on the field every single time that Young is out there, so we at least know that seems to be for real as well. And it seems like the Giants have kind of told us who their starters at wide receiver are going to be. Darius, we got 10 dropbacks from Daniel Jones. This past Friday, Darius Slayton out there for 8, Isaiah Hodgins out there for 7. So it seems like those guys are going to be your two wides. Jalen Hyatt did mix in with the ones a little bit. So we might be seeing him, a guy that we were wondering, is he going to be someone that is going to contribute in year one? Seems like he might be, at least getting a few snaps here and there. Paul Spohr are going to join us. Let's talk all things baseball on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with the GBank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the GBank Visa Signature Card can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. GBank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/Visa. That is g.bank/Visa today to get more details. Interesting. Like this, you know, listen, people coming to accepting, a little bit more accepting of our world. Mm-hmm. Kelly, I'm sure I've had cards give me the finger before when I've tried to,
yeah,
like, you know,
me too.
Do things. So good to see that they are coming along
here. Cats get locked up for a little bit. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
You know, it's like, did you try to do this? I'm like, yeah, I tried to do this. Like, what do you mean? Of course,
like,
I tried.
Are you sure this was you? Yes,
you get,
I know.
You get the little notification. Like, are you sure you? Yeah, I'm sure. I'm 100% positive I tried to do this. Like, 9 times I tried to do it. And I'm calling you at 2 a.m. Wait, never mind. That's another, you know, that's another story for another day. You can find his great work, not only written, but audio, over at FanGraphs. You can find him on pretty much all platforms at Spohr. He is Paul Spohr. Paul, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, Matt. Good to talk to you.
You as well, my friend. Let's start in the AL East, in which the Orioles, the team that everybody was like, okay, it'll eventually slow down. It'll eventually wear down. It's too many young guys, too reliant on too many guys that don't have a ton of experience. Oh, as we get into later part of the season, they hadn't played this many games before, et cetera, et cetera. All we hear is why the Orioles weren't going to get it done. Here they sit with a 3-game lead over the Rays, 8.5 over the Jays, 11 over the Red Sox. And if you look, completely decimated are the Red Sox on the pitching side of things. They got the whole Wander Franco thing going on as well. So are the Orioles going to hold on to this thing?
I certainly think so. It's looking really rough for the Rays right now. And, you know, you mentioned obviously the Wander situation, which the baseball aspect of it doesn't even matter until we find out what's going on with whether or not he's guilty. But then just the pitching that they've been hemorrhaging, right? Like, even if that hadn't come up, they seem to give up like an ace every 6 weeks, right? They lost Rasmussen, then they lost Springs, then they lost McClanahan for a time. Then he came back, then he's gone, right? You just can't keep hemorrhaging that kind of pitching. I know they can find guys. I know Zach Littell out of nowhere pitching well. After a while, though, it runs out. I think that they've just been too depleted. Obviously, they still have an amazing run differential built up early on. They're not a bad team, and only 3 games back, obviously things can happen. But I'm not going to try to fence it here. Baltimore, I think, is a substantially better team right now than Tampa Bay. So I think that 3-game deficit might be a little bit misleading if people are trying to get on the Rays thing. It's only 3 games out. I don't know how you feel confident about jumping on them right now, even though they still have plenty of talent. The Orioles just look a lot better right now.
Paul, would you almost say that if anybody was going to run them down, it would be Toronto as opposed to Tampa?
Exactly. Because again, I'm not sure where Tampa Bay is going to get the consistent pitching. And that Toronto team, you know, they've got some things going really well right now. Hyunjin Ryu coming off the IL pitching pretty well. And Yusei Kikuchi hasn't given up a homer in quite some time, which is his biggest issue. That's really the only issue he's ever had, but it's been such a persistent one that it's kept him from being all that good. This year, he's been on a roll lately and the homers are in check. In addition to guys like Gausman and Jose Barrios, who are quite good start to start. So they've got some pitching going. They always have decent hitting, although it's been a little underwhelming this year. Now that Bo's back, can they get on an offensive run and maybe they chase down the Orioles? But I almost like them a little bit better than the Rays, especially because you'll get longer odds too. If you do want to bet against the O's, I think I would go long with the Jays.
No division race in the NL East or the NL West, but in the Central, we got the Brewers, we got the Cubs, we got the Reds. As we sit right now, Cubs 3 games back of the Brewers, who sit atop at 68-57, Cubs 64-59. 4 games back are the Reds at 64-61. Do you trust any of these teams? Actually, that's not the question, because you probably don't trust any of these teams. Which one of these teams do you trust the most, and which one are you actually thinking is going to get it done when it's all said and done?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because I was actually just streaming like right before we got on here talking about the Brewers and how I've talked about the Brewers to Gil throughout the year, saying that I just can't get away from them. And here they are still in first. They're never really the glamour team. Nobody's really that in on them. And yet they've maintained first pretty much throughout this year. Maybe they've had periods of time where they've dipped down, but here they are in first on August 21st. They've got their 3 aces going with Woodruff, Burns, and Peralta. And that's a big key for me, because the offense is definitely underwhelmed. Yelich is having a great season. It's been overshadowed by the fact that pretty much the rest of the team, I think Contreras is the only other guy with a plus season right now. So they need to get a little more offense going. But I think if they get in the dance with the 3 aces and some capable hitters, they can make a run. So I still favor them. I respect what the Cubs are doing. I think they're going to give them all they can handle. But if I'm betting, I'm still going Brewers right now.
The AL West is pretty interesting, as things have really tightened up over there. Now, you have the Astros that have had to do without Kyle Tucker the last few days due to illness, and maybe that was a pretty bad timing in all of this, because the Rangers go on a 4-game skid, and yet the Astros are on a 3-game skid. They did not capitalize on this at all, still find themselves 2.5 back. And now, oh, by the way, the Mariners are only 3 games back. They have won 6 in a row. As we look at this division, this is pretty interesting, because I think all 3 of these teams are pretty good. Do you trust the Mariners? Agreed. Or do you trust the Mariners? It seems like they're getting hot at the right time.
It really does seem like that. And, you know, we should mention that it's compounded, because the Mariners, those last 3 wins were against the Astros. So they really made hay in Houston. Great series there too. And so great work by them. I definitely think that they're fully in this. I don't think it's Texas, the 2 Texas teams, and then just the Mariners kind of hanging out. I think this is squarely a 3-team race. The Mariners took full advantage of this week, got themselves firmly back in this. I still lean toward Houston, but I got love for all three of these teams. This is a real tough one for me. You know, if you had to take it early on one of the teams, I'm not sure I'm going to diversify. I might just kind of stick with the team I've been with all year. For me, that's Houston. If you've been a Rangers or a Mariners person, then by all means, stick with your club, because I really think this is going to be a crazy three-team race. I really want to look at the schedule and see how much these three play each other down the stretch too, because that could create some amazing series. It's a bummer that the Angels have fallen off, because this could have been a four-team race if they had stuck around instead of having that losing streak right after the deadline.
Paul, we look at the NL and the wild card, and Philly's sitting in the top spot right now. They have a half a game on the Giants, and then you see Cubs, Reds, Marlins, Diamondbacks all just clumped together right there. Any given day, this thing can just shuffle all over the place. Then you see the Padres and the Mets, 6 and 7 back. You look at this Padres team, you wonder how in the world they're in the position that they're in right now. Do you believe at all that there's, I mean, look, we still have a decent amount of baseball to play. Are they too far back? Do you trust? I mean, I think the Marlins of the teams I don't maybe believe in the most, maybe the Marlins. What do you think about the Padres? They're too far back. What about the Mets at 7?
It's weird that they're one game different, and I feel exponentially different about the two teams. I'm fully in on the Padres being in this. With their plus 57 run differential. It's probably just that too. I'll be honest, a plus 57 run differential for San Diego minus 34 for the Mets. I think that factor alone is why, despite them being just a game apart, I have so much more confidence in the Padres. They also didn't trade two aces the way the Mets did either, right? So it's a different composition of ball clubs too. I don't think it's too crazy to say that despite being just a game apart, you have a much more favorable lean toward one than the other. But yeah, I think the Padres are still firmly in this. We just saw what happened with the Mariners when they had a good week and their two competitors had a bad week. That exact same thing can happen with the Padres. If the Marlins, Reds, and Diamondbacks each have a crummy week and the Padres get going, boom, all of a sudden they're firmly in this. So no, I'm not writing them off at all. I'm still putting bets on them too. I really think that they're the fun long shot here, because I still believe in this unit. I know Musgrove's out. I think they have enough talent to kind of get around that. They've been a disappointment. I understand the people that are frustrated with them, but I have a hard time getting away from this Padres club. I really do.
Paul, anything on the card today? Any game that stands out to you? Anything you're looking at?
Nothing that's jumped out too much in terms of games. I will say I'm kind of in on this Braves guy, Alan Winans. He's got a 2-start week this week. If you play fantasy, you can get him for both of those. You know, but picking the Braves over the Mets isn't really much of a crazy thing there. But I do have some DFS plays, which include Winans, by the way. Really excited about what he can do. Pair him with like a Lucas Giolito. And I'm going to do something that's kind of insane. I'm looking at an Oakland A's mini stack.
Oh.
I know. But Zach Geloff, Lawrence Butler, Seth Brown, those are probably the three, maybe Shea Langeliers if you want to go cheap at catcher. These are DraftKings prices that I'm citing. But I want to get some premium pitching today. So I want to get with like Luis Castillo. Alan Winans is kind of cheap on the second pitcher. And then I'm going to go for some Oakland A's. Yeah, big on Zach Geloff. Love this Lawrence Butler guy who just got called up. And like I said, maybe Seth Brown, maybe Shea Langeliers. We don't often talk Oakland in a positive way here, but I'm going to give them some love today. I think they can beat up Alec Marsh a little bit.
Yeah, man, that'll be certainly some interesting stuff there. And Oakland A's stack, you're going to get it low owned, Paul. Like, that's for sure.
That's the thing.
Yes.
Low owned, low price. So then the guys around them, you know, you can go with like a Seager. You can go for some big Texas players. You can go really double pitcher too if you want. You can go Castillo and another big name pitcher. That's the thing. If you go with these Oakland guys, you can go really, really expensive everywhere else too. So that's kind of the beauty of it. I wouldn't recommend it very often, but I like them a bit today, the A's, believe it or not.
It's a good thing you have not recommended it very often.
Enough.
Yes, that's a good thing. You can find him on all the platforms at Spore. He is Paul Spore. Catch stuff over at Fangraphs as well. Paul, thanks for the time, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Take care.
Yeah, man. That is how I kind of see it as well. I can't give up on the Padres. I don't know why. I want to give up on the Padres. I can't give up on them for whatever reason that may be. We'll take a look at the Ryder Cup, and me and Kelly will debate who should be on it, who should not be on it. Come on back. It is a numbers game here on VSiN.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Turn a loss into a win with BetMGM, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place the same game parlay wager with at least 4 legs on any Major League Baseball game. If all legs of the parlay hit but one, you'll get your stake back in bonus bets up to $25. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions, 21 or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards are issued As a non-withdrawable bonus bet, bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. U.S. promotional offers not available in Kansas, Mississippi, D.C., Nevada, New York, or Ontario. If you have a gaming problem, 1-800-GAMBLER. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. 800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. Bets off. 800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. And 800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico in a partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. This offer is not valid to Puerto Rico residents. We'll give you the helpline, but is not available for the Puerto Rico residents out there. But it's okay. Still need to get that out there. Spreading the good message. Spreading the good word. Mm-hmm. Like the G-Card. Like the G-Card, where you can get your gambling credit card.
Like, there you go.
Dude, I'm telling you, it could have come in handy for me a few different times. There's no doubt about it. All right, so we threw them up just very shortly at the end of the first segment. Kelly, I do want to throw those odds back up again for the Ryder Cup. This is going to basically be the thing that everyone talks about for the next several weeks. The tour champ, you want to make the final 30. And now we have whittled our way from the 50 to the 30. And everyone wants to make the final 30. But with the weighted scoring system and all the things that are going on, Kelly, I mean, like, look, half the field's dead on arrival. It's just you're collecting a paycheck, which, again, you earned it. You're getting the paycheck. But, I mean, listen, if you're starting 10 strokes off the lead, you're not winning. You know, it's just not happening, right? And so here we are. We're going to be talking more Ryder Cup, I think, more than anything else. And so these are the guys. Captain's pick, Zach Johnson's going to have to go in, and he's going to have to figure out who he wants to round out this team. All the obvious guys already there. You're talking Xander. You're talking Max Homa. You're talking Scotty. You're talking Harmon. These guys are already made the team automatic qualifiers inside of the top six, but there are captain's picks, and Colin Morikawa at minus 1,000, at least according to the people over at Bet365, think that he is a lock to make it. Ricky Fowler, who has been one of the most consistent players on tour. And Kelly, as popular as Ricky is, I think people might be looking at this number going like, oh, it's just because he's boys with all the guys and et cetera, et cetera. But man, listen, Ricky Fowler has been one of the most consistent players on tour all season long. And I honestly think that it would be a shame if he didn't make it, if he wasn't one of the captain's picks, because I think he has played his way and earned his way out there with week in and week out, putting together really, really consistent performances.
Yeah, absolutely. I know what you're saying. I think that there are, you know, whenever we talk Ryder Cup, and we're going to get to a couple of these guys this applies to, where the name matters. The name matters for Ryder Cup more than what they've done on the course maybe recently. And that is not the case with Ricky Fowler, at least this year. Ricky Fowler's been one of the best players on tour this entire season. So add that along with the fact that, yes, he has some good friends on this team and would seemingly be the perfect fit for it. Mm-hmm. That minus 700 is light, if anything. Like, he's in. Him and Colin Morikawa are in.
Yeah, the interesting missing from this list is Jordan Spieth, and I think it's because the number would have to be like minus 20,000, and then at that point, there's just no there's no point. Jordan Spieth is on the outside looking in, but again, this is a guy we know for sure is getting. He's eighth, actually, in the standings, and so being so close as it is anyway, and then, of course, with his history and all of that, he's going to be on the team. Brooks Koepka is the one that's the most interesting. He was sitting inside the automatic qualifying top six for the longest time. And then this past week, due to the results over at the BMW, falls to number seven. So literally one spot out and literally 29 points behind Xander Schauffele, who is the sixth automatic qualifier for the Ryder Cup team. There's mixed emotions on this, Kelly, because you look and you can say, man, he really showed up a lot in majors. But how much do we weigh complete body of work? How much do we weigh showing up week in, week out, and being able to do it on a week in and week out basis? We know the touring schedule for LIV is far, far lighter than it is for the PGA Tour. And so you look at some of these other guys, like we're talking about, like a Colin Morikawa, like a Ricky Fowler, like a Cam Young. We'll talk about Justin Thomas in just a little bit, but like these guys that have shown up and have on a week-to-week basis shown that they have consistency, that they are in good form as we move into the Ryder Cup. Now, we only have a very, very small sample size with Brooks Koepka, and that, I think, would be the knock if somebody wanted to keep him off the team.
I don't think you can keep him off. I think there are going to be some rumors swirling of, yes, Zach Johnson and LIV and all that type of stuff when it comes to Brooks Koepka's selection. You can't. It's Brooks Koepka. He comes up big in the big spots. You have to take him. We saw that again this year. I think there's a lot that you and I have talked about with, concerns over some players' developments over on the LIV side. Brooks Koepka is not one of them. Everybody who's left for LIV, there's been one or two exceptions, and it's Brooks Koepka and maybe Dustin Johnson when it comes to almost everything that we talk about. And Brooks Koepka showed this year that he still belongs in the conversation with the best in the world. And I know what you're saying. I don't really have concerns over a guy that, at his age, with what he's done this year. I'm not concerned about him getting ready and being ready for a Ryder Cup format.
Yeah, so let's play devil's advocate here, because, again, if I was Zach Johnson, I'm putting him on the team. But let's play devil's advocate, because this is going to be one of the arguments as well. There is something to this from a team perspective, from a camaraderie perspective, from a locker room perspective. Sure. He's the only LIV guy that's even close to making it. I know Bryson has played well just in the last couple of weeks, but he was horrid before that, and so like he's not gonna make it. So now you bring in the one guy, the one LIV guy amongst all of these PGA Tour guys, all of these guys who most of them has spoke out against LIV, and all the guys that chose to do it, kind of like throwing jabs here and there to those guys and stuff. There is that aspect. And listen, I will say that is a real thing, right? I mean, I do believe that. I mean, these guys are going to have to hang out together and practice together, and they'll be eating, all that stuff. And if you're looking across the room and you just despise the guy that's sitting at the end of the table, that's probably not great for everything. That will be one of the things that's talked about over the next couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'll go back to it. I think him and Dustin, I don't think they ruffled as many feathers as some of these other guys, right? And maybe Dustin less than Brooks, but I think Brooks has also shown since the move to LIV, he's wondered aloud about returning to the PGA Tour, right? Like, there's been those rumors out there. We've heard some of these golfers talk about what it's been like at some of these majors too, and I think there's a couple guys like Brooks and DJ where. Look, I don't think they had that many friends when they were on the tour anyways. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think they moved to LIV. I don't think they handled it in such a way that they pissed off a whole lot more people. So I hear what you're saying, and I think that's something, yes, that you do have to keep in mind. I just don't think Brooks Koepka this year is going to be that big of an issue. I think this LIV stuff has gone on long enough now where maybe some of those feelings have played themselves out already.
I think people are going to look at Lucas Glover at +300, and they're going to look at that and say, oh my gosh, how do you keep him off? This is a lock. I'm going to go take this 3-1 on Lucas Glover. You would really, really be buying into recency form, yes. Like recent form, if you're going to buy into Lucas Glover. Because again, yes, he got hot. He won a couple of tournaments in a row and had a decent showing this past week. Before that, Lucas Glover was way down in the standings. And Lucas Glover, Kelly, as someone you and I have bet him on multiple occasions, Lucas Glover is a guy that just was never really looked at as a serious contender in these tournaments. He was a great ball striker that couldn't putt, and you just knew when it all came down to it, he was going to miss the putt that he needed to do to get it done. Now, switches putters to this broomstick lab golf putter that he's using. He's putting a ton better. That said, you'd really be buying into the recent form, and I think the other thing that people don't really realize, because it just is such a hot topic because we're talking about the Ryder Cup so much, this actually isn't played until September the 29th. So we're how hot you are on August 20th, I mean, it's still a month yeah. And a week down the line, right? And so there is an argument for that, but you're still 5 weeks away from this tournament actually taking place, and we've seen guys either get really good over the course of 5 weeks or get really bad over the course of 5 weeks. I mean, 5 weeks is a long stretch.
Yeah, it is, with all due respect to Lucas Glover. And I mean that with all due respect. I'm not taking you on this team. You've been great, and I think he's been a kind of champion here recently. I totally agree with some of the things he came out and said about with the tour's new schedule. I hate it as much as he does. And then he goes out and wins a couple times right after he makes those comments. I thought that was awesome. He's just not going on this team. Real quick, Cameron Young, Justin Thomas. Those odds seem way too short. Like, are we convinced those two guys are that big locks to make it right now?
I don't think Justin Thomas. Listen, I think there's going to be some real soul searching with Zach Johnson, with Justin Thomas, Sam Burns, and Keegan Bradley. Yep. I think that like those three guys, because you do have Sam Burns who won a match play event. you know, earlier this year. This is kind of how the Ryder Cup plays, you know, mm-hmm. and so
I'd throw Henley in there too.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting again. Something you can bet on over at Bet365. So we're going to start hour number two with Ben Brown from Pro Football Focus. Let's talk all things preseason and beyond.